Well, my name is Perry Vanderloop. I'm one of the elders here, and I have the honor of bringing the word to you this morning. If you're just joining us, we're going through the amazing book of Ecclesiastes. Oh, love this book. I would say it's in my top three. I love Romans, I love Psalms, and I love Ecclesiastes. And it's a handful. There's a lot in that book, and we're going to look at Ecclesiastes chapter 7 this morning. We're going to go through the whole chapter. It all fits together really nicely. Well, there's a Latin phrase, which is memento mori, which means, remember, you will die. It refers to the symbolic reminders of our looming death, but rather than it being a morbid concept, it's a reminder to detach from the frivolous things of our life and to live with purpose, meaning. All the reminders that we have of our mortality, the older we get, our bodies fail, fall apart. Like it says in Ecclesiastes 12. My good friend is a chiropractor. I go see him every now and then just to say hello, and he has a skeleton in his office. There's the watches on our wrists. That reminds us that time is running out. There's the sunset that shows another day is gone. There's the graveyard that I pass when I go to the Kimberly YMCA. All reminders of our mortality. One day I will take my last breath. They'll put a tag on my toe. They're going to put me in a box and they're going to throw dirt on me. That's the reality for all of us. Hard to hear, but it's the truth. Steve Jobs said, remembering that I'll be dead soon is one of the most important tools I've ever encountered to make the big choices in my life. Marcus Aurelius said you could leave life now. Let that determine what you do, say, and think. The Puritan Edmund Baker said, not everyone dies well, but only those who are strong in faith, bold in courage, and well prepared to meet their God. Every Christian has two great works to do in this world, to live well, to die well. This is one of my only spiritual ambitions, to be ready to die when the time comes, and to die well. All reminders to seize the day, carpem diem. Our text this morning will remind us, death is certain in our future, so live your days well, choose wisely in living and dying. So let's read our text. A lot of verses, but a lot of good verses. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. It's in your worship guide too if you want to follow along. A good name is better than precious ointment. And the day of death than the day of birth. It is better to go into the house of mourning than into the house of feasting. For thus is the end of all mankind, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by sadness the face, the heart is made glad. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better for a man to hear the rebuke of the wise than to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fools. This also is vanity. Surely oppression drives the wise into madness, and a bribe corrupts the heart. Better is the end of a thing than its beginning, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the heart of fools. Say not, why were the former days better than these? It is not from wisdom that you ask this. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, an advantage of those who see the sun. For the protection of wisdom is like the protection of money, and the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of him who has it. Consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, and in the day of adversity, consider God has made one as well as the other, so that man may not find out anything that will be after him. In my vain life, I have seen everything. There is a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs his life in his evil doing. Be not overly righteous. Do not make yourself too wise. Why should you destroy yourself? Be not overly wicked, neither be a fool. Why should you die before the time? It is good that you should fear God. You should take hold of this, and from that do not withhold your hand, for the one who fears God shall come out from both of them. Wisdom gives strength to the wise more than 10 rulers who are in a city. Surely there is not a righteous man on earth who does good and never sins. Do not take to heart all the things that people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. Your heart knows that many times you have cursed yourself, cursed others. All this I have tested by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but wise was far from me. That which has been far off and deep, very deep, who can find it out? I turned my heart to know and to search out and to seek wisdom and the schemes of things and to know the wickedness of folly and the foolishness of that madness. And I find something more bitter than death. The woman whose heart is snares and nets and whose hands are fetters. He who pleases God escapes her, but the sinner is taken by her. Behold, this is what I have found, says the preacher, while adding one thing to another, to find the scheme of things, which my soul has sought repeatedly, but I have not found. One man among a thousand I have found, but a woman among all these I have not found. See alone I have found that God has made man upright, but they have sought out many schemes. The word of the Lord. So why do we need to hear this passage? Well, the big message of Ecclesiastes is life is really out of our control. So we should ask ourselves, how then shall we live? Well, some people will take the escape route, flee reality, numb the pain, party hard, live in the past. Or the other option is Ecclesiastes 7, to learn and to live wisely. And to live wisely, choosing the fear of God. So our main point this morning, it is better to live in wisdom, but it's not the ultimate. The fear of the Lord is. I'm going to read that again. It's better to live in wisdom, but it's not the ultimate. The fear of the Lord is. So our title this morning is Consider Wisdom and the Fear of God. So we're going to have 5 points this morning. In verses 1 through 6, we're going to see, consider the realities of death. In verses 7 through 12, consider godly wisdom over foolishness. Verses 13 through 18, consider the work and the fear of God. Verses 19 through 22, consider wisdom in extending grace to others. And verses 23 through 29, consider wisdom only goes so far. So let's look at verses 1 through 6. The first point, consider the realities of death. Right? Hard to hear, right, after what we've been through. Verse 1 reads, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of birth. It is better to go into the house of mourning than to go in the house of feasting, for this is the end of all mankind, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by sadness of face the heart is made glad. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better for a man to hear the rebuke of the wise than to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fools. This also is vanity. This passage has been called Death is an Evangelist, or Lessons from a Funeral Home. Verse 1 again reads, a good name is better than a precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of birth. So here we come to one of our better statements. There's a lot of them in this passage, but we see here a good name is better than precious ointment. So since the setting here is a funeral and a dead body, that oils and perfumes were used to cover the stench of a dead body. So I think that's what Kohela is playing off of here, that it's better, a good name is better than precious ointment. First question for you this morning, are you wearing the cologne of good character? Are you wearing the cologne of good character? It's been said that every comment we make and every action we take, we either build upward or tear downward our reputation. There's another question. Have you ever thought, what would people say at your funeral? Are you of high character? How do you come across to people? What's your reputation like? Are you representing Christ well to people? Do you have a good name? So I've shared this text at three different funerals, kind of with trepidation. To say in the midst of pain, sorrow, and loss that there can be some benefit in it for you. It's hard to swallow, but it's very, very true. It's better to go in the house of mourning than to the house of feasting, for this is the end of mankind, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by sadness of face the heart is made glad. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It's better for a man to hear the rebuke of the wise than to hear the songs of fool. Again, for as crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of fools. This also is vanity. So what the author is saying, it's better to go into a funeral than into a party because it's going to have more impact. One commentator said about sorrow, how fast we learn in the day of sorrow. J.C. Ryle said, there is no commentary that opens up the Bible so much as sickness and sorrow. You know, when things are going good, we kind of go our own way. We kind of forget about God at times. But when we're afflicted, God always draws us back to Him. And I always love to go into the Psalms because they're so meaningful to us. But this whole idea of death, and as we live out our days, I'm currently ministering at a couple nursing homes, and what a blessing that's been. And you get to know people and hang out with them, and you get to hear their stories. And kind of one of the reoccurring things is they say, you know, all my friends are gone. All my brothers and sisters are gone, and I'm the last one left. One by one by one, they all die. But that's the reality of death. So we come to our second point in verses 7 through 12. Consider godly wisdom and being patient. In your eulogy, could people say that you were godly and patient? Would it be that evident in your life that people could say that? Verse 7 reads, surely oppression drives the wise into madness, and a bribe corrupts the heart. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the heart of fools. Say not, why were the former days better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, an advantage to those who see the sun. For the protection of wisdom is like the protection of money, and the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of him who has it. So here we see in these verses, 7 through 12, that wisdom provides knowledge in navigating through the frustrations of life, the dangers of compromising and anger, the trap of nostalgia, thinking that the good old days were better, and the trap of wealth without wisdom, compared to choosing the better, from knowing that the end is better, being patient is better, controlling your anger, and the wisdom that that provides in our lives. But notice verses 8 and 9. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the heart of fools. And we know that being patient is the work of the Holy Spirit, like it says in Galatians 5. It's also referred to as being long-suffering, slow to anger. It refers to how we treat people, how we react to insults, difficult situations, not flying off the handle. John Blanchard said, biblical patience is not rooted in fatalism that says everything is out of control. It's rooted in faith that says everything is in God's control. What are ways that we can be more patient, or helpful thoughts to be more patient? Remember that God is sovereign over every detail of our lives. Things are not out of control. Things are in control, and he is controlling all those things. So we can kind of relax in that. Also, remember that God has always been very patient with us. He's patient with us. We should be patient with others. Here's another helpful tool. I think I learned this from Dan Breed. Someone says something against you, count to 10 and breathe and then respond. Don't respond right away is the idea here. So your eulogy, would people say that you were godly and that you were patient? So we come to our third point, verses 13 through 18, consider the work and the fear of God. To eulogy, could people say that you feared God as you lived out your life? Consider the work of God, who can make straight what he has made crooked. In the day of prosperity, be joyful. In the day of adversity, consider God had made one as well as the other, so that man may not find out anything that will be after him. Verse 15, in my vain life, I have seen everything. There's a righteous man who perished in his righteousness, and there is the wicked man who prolongs his life in his evil doing. Be not overly righteous, and do not make yourself wise. Why should you destroy yourself? Be not overly wicked, neither be a fool. Why should you die before your time? It is good that you should take hold of this, and from that withhold not your hand. For the one who fears God shall come out from both of them. Interesting verses. These verses would explain that God is sovereign. We cannot control our destinies. Life is out of our control. Sometimes life is not fair. And all those realities that are true, how should we respond? Maybe you've heard of Thomas Boston. He wrote a book and had some sermons called The Crook and the Lot. And it comes from verse 13, where it says, "Consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked?" What's the lot? Would be our lot in life, styled by the providence of God, the events and the circumstances that God had woven into our daily existence. You just kind of like live in your life and things happen, right? Then there's the crook. It would be the unforeseen troubles that afflict us, which every human life has a crook. It can be the disagreeable parts, the thorns, the unforeseen trials that cannot be straightened out. Again, you're just living your life and bad things happen. What do we do? We're to trust in the providence of God, knowing that sometimes providence smiles and sometimes providence frowns. In the good days, the bad days, we should be able to trust and accept all the things that happen in our lives. Since we're talking about Thomas Boston, he made a comment on verse 1 that says that the day of our death is better than the day of our birth. It's for if you're a Christian. And our dying day is the day we enter a better world with higher perfection, greater purity, deeper rest, better company, and better employment than the world we entered on the day that we were born. And if we believe that, that should spur us on to evangelize people. Because we know where we're going. May God help us to share the gospel with people. But we see here the two dangers that lead to destruction. The two thieves in verses 15 and 16 where it says, don't be self-righteous. You can say, don't be a legalist, prideful, arrogant. The people who think that they are trusting in their good works, it only leads to destruction. It's the Matthew 7 people, the Lord, Lord people, where they're going to have the audacity to say, Lord, Lord, we did all these things in your name. We gave to the poor. We took care of the needy. And Jesus will say to them, depart from me, I never knew you, you workers of lawlessness. So don't be self-righteous. I ran across this illustration on self-righteousness. I was shocked, confused, bewildered as I entered heaven's door. Not by the beauty of it all, nor the lights, nor the decor, but it was the folks in heaven who made me sputter and gasp. The thieves, the liars, the sinners, the alcoholics, and the trash. There stood the kid from seventh grade who swiped my lunch money twice. Next to him was my old neighbor who never said anything nice. Bill, who I always thought was rotting away in hell, was sitting pretty on cloud nine, looking incredibly well. I nudged Jesus. What's the deal? I would love to hear your take. How did all these sinners get up here? God must have made a mistake. And that's why everybody was so quiet, so somber. Give me a clue. Hush, child, he said. They're all in shock at the thought of seeing you. Self-righteous, right? We don't want to be self-righteous. The Bible has a lot to say about that. And then verse 17, don't be wicked or foolish, which speaks of licentiousness, out of control, lack of moral restraint, unrighteousness. It's the person who says, I'm going to party, hardy, and whatever happens after death, who really cares? But the correct path is verse 18. The middle ground is being fearful of God. The whole idea of being fearful of God, I think we've lost that over the years. I think back in the 40s and 50s, I think people had more of an awe towards God and more fear of him. I would say even in the church, I think we need to get back to that. But here's a quote on being fearful of God. It's been said to fear God is to revere God. It's to know that he is God and we are not. It is to hold him in awe for all his majestic beauty. It's to have a respect for his mighty and awesome power. Having the true and proper fear of God will help us not to be self-righteous. We will know that God sees us as we really are. And this will teach us not to pretend to be something we are not. And God will also keep us from living a wicked life, because when we understand his holiness, the last thing we want to do is to fall under his judgment. Do you fear God? I hope so. I hope so. But it's a good thing to do. It's a good thing to fear God. In your eulogy, could people say that you feared God? When we come to our point four, in verses 19 through 22, consider wisdom in extending grace to others. In your eulogy, could people say that you were gracious to others, the way you treated people? In verse 19, wisdom gives strength to the wise more than 10 rulers who are in a city. Surely there is not a righteous man on earth who does good and never sins. Do not take to heart all the things that people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. Your heart knows that many times you yourself have cursed others. So here's wisdom applied to our lives in a certain situation. But we see in verse 19 that wisdom is powerful. Verse 20, we're all fallen and messed up. Verse 21, people will say hurtful things against you, against me. And in verse 22, you know in your heart that you are guilty of the same thing. This passage shows the power of wisdom in overlooking offenses, extending grace to others. We must remember that we are fallen creatures living with other fallen creatures, and forgiveness must prevail in our lives. Right? We all have spouses or family members, friends, and coworkers, and you spend enough time with each other, and you know, people get in their moods. Maybe they get, what's the thing called? Hangry? You know, the blood sugar falls. Not enough food and too much coffee, and things are said and against you, and they come back to you, and then how do you respond? How do you respond? Oh yeah, that person said this about me. You know, I'm kind of guilty of that too. So the whole idea is let it go. Let it go. Take the wood off the fire. So again, another question. In your eulogy, would people say that you were gracious to others? Then we come to our last point in verses 23 through 29. Consider wisdom only goes so far. In your eulogy, could people say you were humble and you trusted Christ? Verse 23 reads, all this I have tested by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. That which has been is far off and deep, very deep. Who can find it out? I turned my heart to know and to search out and to seek wisdom in the schemes of things and to know the wickedness of folly and the foolishness that is madness. And I find something more bitter than death, the woman whose heart is snares and nets, and whose hands are fetters. He who pleases God escapes her, but the sinner is taken by her. Behold, this is what I have found, says the preacher, while adding one thing to another to find the schemes of things which my soul has sought repeatedly. But I have not found one man among a thousand I have found, but a woman among all these I have not found. See, this alone I have found, that God has made man upright, but they have sought out many schemes. So in verses 23 through 25, Solomon, in, I think, deep humility, says, wisdom and human understanding only go so far. Our understanding is limited. But this is the way of humility and faith. John Calvin called it learned wisdom. It's knowing the limits of wisdom is part of wisdom. The more we know, the more we should realize how little we know. And that whatever wisdom we gain, it comes as a gift from God himself. And this should produce a humility within us. And then there's this mention of a woman in these verses. Who is this woman? Kohala or Solomon is probably referring back to Proverbs chapter 1 through 9, the allegory of Lady Wisdom and Lady Folly, a young man searching for a wife, an illustration of choosing the wise. Life is not easy. There's hardship in the search. But notice in verse 28, Solomon admits the pursuit of wisdom ultimately fails short. And in verse 29, it says, see this alone, I have found that God has made man upright, but they have sought out many schemes. And this is really the doctrine of original righteousness, where Solomon is pointing back to Genesis before the fall, the first Adam. But because of the fall, wisdom only goes so far. It's kind of shocking, actually. This is as far as Ecclesiastes 7 can take us. What's the Bible telling us? Wisdom will not save us. It's kind of sad, kind of shocking. So now what? Only Christ can save us. Because if you look at Colossians 2:3, Paul writes that in Christ are all hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. So praise God for the second Adam, Jesus Christ. We should study, we should seek out wisdom and knowledge, how to live good Christian lives, but it all should flow to Jesus Christ. In your eulogy, could people say you were humble and you trusted in Jesus Christ? There's a Latin phrase, bene vivere, which means live well, right? Our days are numbered, like it says in Psalm 90. Lord, teach us to number our days.